Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
It's not an easy life to try to also not only live as an artist, you know, support yourself fully as an artist, but also in a way that's equitable and value-led, like you said. Like, it's really important to me that I'm not gouging anyone. I want to be generous. I want to share what I can. And living in sort of this like abundance mindset as opposed to a scarcity mindset, which is really hard, you know? It's hard to maintain that when you're like, I don't know how I'm going to pay the bills next month, but we'll figure it out. The other thing is, like, we're creative people. We figure it out. Like, there's always something to be done.
Today, I have the pleasure of bringing on Victoria Vanderlaan to the Artist Mother Podcast. Victoria is a textile artist and mother of three, living and working in downtown Albany, New York. Victoria's heritage is in quilt making, and she carries this knowledge and tradition forward in her sewn paintings, echoing the work of her forebears while innovating new possibilities for the form. Never having formally studied art, Victoria is a self and generationally taught artist who pulls from her history, her intuition, and experimentation to inform and create her work. She's been awarded multiple residencies, including the Elizabeth Murray Artist Residency, the Millay Arts Corps Residency, and the Ware Farm Residency. In 2021, both the Albany Institute of History and Art in Albany, New York, and the Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, New York, acquired pieces of Victoria's work for their permanent collections. And in 2023, Victoria received her first public art commission from Opalka Gallery and Albany Public Library, and her large-scale textile installation piece titled Dream Work currently hangs at the Pine Hills Library in Albany, New York. A strong proponent of the solidarity economy and passionate about equitable access to art, Victoria offers an ongoing series of textile sketches with a pay what you can model on Instagram and has recently shifted to a sliding scale pricing model for all of her work. I can't wait to talk about all of these things, including Victoria's work and her artist mother identity. Victoria, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast. Yay!
Thanks so much for having me, Kaylin.
We were obviously chatting before the call, and I'm like, it just has been a long time coming, because you've been one of my art crushes for many years. So aww. I'm so happy. especially as I was, you know, really getting into textile work and quilting. You've been a big inspiration. So here we go. We're here. We get to chat now. I'm excited.
Me too.
That's kind of the fun thing about this podcast, is I get to reach out to artists I like, and, you know, obviously, but it's like such a pleasure when I get to do it in the moment. So, Victoria, why don't you start by taking us back to your childhood? I'm just always curious if art was something you were raised around, or how you were kind of exposed to art, and how maybe those threads brought you to where you are today. Like, was art, being an artist, something you thought you could be when you were a kid?
Yeah, that's so interesting. My story is, I think, a bit different from a lot of the folks that you have on the podcast. I truly never conceived of being an artist. Like, I should say, I never thought I could be an artist, but I always have been an artist. Mm. So I realized, looking back, mm-hmm. and that all the people around me who were so creative were also artists. So I grew up around, you know, I say that I'm generationally taught. Mm-hmm. I never formally studied art, but I grew up around mostly, you know, women who were extremely skilled and talented in needle arts and textile arts. So, you know, my grandmother made all of my clothing when I was, well, all my like fancy dresses, my first communion dress. She like made, you know, in the 80s, we had all of those like Laura Ashley dresses and blouses, and she made all of that stuff for me.
Wow.
it was amazing. And also taught me, you know, how to stitch. And mainly, you know, I just remember going to my grandma's house and we would always be working on a stitching project together. So just being exposed to it, and my great grandmother was a master quilter, and I would be able to play with her scraps. So I would just, you know, piece together all by hand, piece together little patchwork compositions, little pillows. And then as well, my mother, who is still such an inspiration to me, is just so talented and so skilled in like every form of textile art you can think of. Currently she's really into embroidery. So I would call her a master embroiderer, but you know, growing up, she made my dad's suits, you know, I've always been a sort of, like garment making, not my forte, but like I make Halloween costumes and things, but no, that like three-dimensional sewing is just something special.
I've tried to make a shirt one time and
oh no,
I've never worn the shirt. Let's just say that.
So I think growing up and also the minute my dad was a woodworker and he was an avid fly fisherman, he tied his own flies. So there was a lot of this sort of, if you want something, as well as, you know, there was a certain amount of like economy in this, like, you know, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. We were, you know, fine, but not super well off. And so we made things ourselves. We knew we could acquire, if we didn't have the skill, we could acquire the skill. So that's sort of like my mindset throughout my life. And also I will say, I didn't grow up in a household where we like went to art museums, although there was some exposure to art. And certainly I consider all of these beautiful textile things that were in my life as art.
Yes.
But at the time it was just like, oh, art is drawing and painting. I don't do that. Like to this day, I don't draw or paint, but maybe someday I will incorporate that. But I think of that about my dad worked downtown. I grew up outside of Albany, New York. And my dad worked at the New York State Plaza, which has an amazing modern art collection. So, you know, I grew up like picking him up from work and being exposed. I remember to this day, my favorite piece in that collection that I first fell in love with when I was a child was this beautiful, I don't know the title of it actually, but this beautiful, huge wall, like relief piece that's by Al Loving, which is just this beautiful sort of like a tumbling blocks, very colorful, giant piece. And I just have always loved that. And now I literally live like a block and a half away from the plaza, and I'm able to go up there and see those pieces and remember, like, it's such a full circle thing. Like, oh, I never would have dreamed that I would be sort of in conversation with this art, you know? So like, I'm an artist now. So yeah, basically I didn't really come to an art career until after my children were born. And I mean, we can get more into that, but I always say like I was 40 the first time I called myself an artist. I'm 47 now, and probably 42, 43 before I believed it.
I love that. Like,
you know what I mean? You gotta kind of just fake it till you make it. You gotta just believe it. And you're not always going to believe it. There are moments still where I'm like, who am I kidding?
I love that. I love, you know, I think as like young artists, we're particularly people who go through art school, you're kind of trained with this mindset of like, there's this very linear path and you're here because you were destined to be an artist and it was like in your nature. And, you know, there's kind of these like boundaries that are built up between like what is and isn't art. Right. And I love when more mature artists who actually have like, you know, a more developed perspective on the identity of being an artist, when they're able to look back and like dismantle that kind of thinking and say, no, like this tomato salad was, you know, something that inspired my creativity. And, you know, as a kid, I remember going to X, Y, and Z, and that, like, I pulled that from my repertoire, and that memory makes me an artist. Like, just like the integration of being a human and experiencing things and pulling those threads together, in your artist identity, like later on in life. I find that like much more relatable and enriching and honestly inspiring than like, kind of that more like linear way of thinking about being an artist,
Yeah, I feel like it had been, I think when I started, why I say like it took me a few years to really believe that I was an artist is, because of all of that sort of ingrained thinking of like, well, no, remember, art is not women's work. It's not, this, but that's not true. And like, I know that's not true, but even still, that can sometimes creep in with insecurity. But honestly, I think it's really sets me apart. And it really embraced the story now as part of my origin.
Yeah, and I find it interesting too that as somebody who didn't go to art school, you carried all of those, like, all of those, what do you want to call it? Like the stereotypes and those modes of thinking. Like it's so pervasive, these kind of rules that we feel like exist. And yeah, like I think the best kind of artists are not limiting themselves within those rules. They're breaking those boundaries,
And I think we're really in a moment right now that where the art world is having to sort of reckon with this idea that, textiles, quilts, all of this, there are people like you, painters, who are incorporating that into their work, and it's truly being recognized as an art form. There are still the holdouts who look down on it, and I don't care about them. It's not important to me. Like I just love seeing people exploring with, new techniques. And for me, I do see myself branching, in the future, branching out of textiles, whereas a lot of painters are branching into textiles. So yeah, I'm encouraged that I can go beyond my known medium as well.
I love that. Also, just I love the way that you described the legacy of textile work within your family and kind of that concept of, just acquiring a skill because you have a need or you want to make something beautiful that exists in your life, whether you have the resources, like it even if you don't have the resources to just buy it, like you can learn how to make it, right? I love that like idea of thinking. I do want to talk a little bit about, that moment of transition for you when you already had your kids and, I'm not sure what kind of career you had before you turned 40 and you started making art. Do you want to just touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, no career. So I've always been, even within my family of kind of do it yourself folks, I was very much the black sheep and the sort of very into sort of counterculture. I've always been very, anti-capitalist. Just my family's kind of like, who, where'd you come from? We all belong. So I actually not only not did didn't go to art school, but I actually dropped out of college twice. So I don't even have a never finished any degree. I don't consider myself an uneducated person. I just sort of went about it in alternative ways. So yeah. So I worked, I worked a lot in like libraries. At one point, I did a farm apprenticeship. I thought I would start a small organic farm. All of this kind of, alternative kind of, I really wanted just a simple, honest life. The idea of right life livelihood is really important to me. So sort of like doing no harm with your work and, bringing beauty into the world, not harm. And, it was just really important to me to live my life in a way that felt good. And a lot of folks, this is not to say, I don't want to criticize folks who like go into the working world, because that's what we need to, a lot of us need to do. but you know, it wasn't for me. So I didn't really have a career. I was working when I got pregnant with my oldest, I was working for a community garden organization.
Amazing.
So I left, I was like, I'm having a baby. This is my job now. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is what I'm going to do. We're going to move to Northern Vermont. We're going to farm. We're going to have babies. It's going to be amazing. And I would say maybe 6 months into that, I was the most, you know, depressed, isolated, postpartum, like it was rough. There was nobody there. I was very isolated. My husband was working, obviously he had to support. And I just was like, this is not what I want. Actually, no, this isn't what I want. So we actually moved back to the Albany. Actually, we moved to downtown Albany. Cause I wanted my mom, you know, I was like, oh, I need my mom.
Community.
So I was like, and that was kind of the best move. I don't consider myself a city girl, but I, here I am. I live in downtown Albany, which is not, you know, a huge city, but it's urban. And we've lived here for almost 18 years now.
Wow.
My second child was born here, but we've built this amazing community, or we've joined this amazing community that already existed. And at that point, you know, I was just like, okay, I realized like what I was imagining for my life, this idyllic, like, you know, farm, you know, just kind of back to basics lifestyle is not going to work for me. I need more. I need more community. I need more diversity. I need, you know, something for just me. And that's when I started thinking about, okay, well, I can make stuff. I'm going to make stuff and try to sell it. You know, maybe I'll help the family a little bit, you know. And I think it was in 2008, a couple friends of mine and I applied to Brooklyn Renegade, so like a craft fair. And, you know, we just went there with a bunch of random stuff. I did, had a bunch of like sewn kit baby stuff, basically. Like I had a quilt that was like recycled materials, like all of this random stuff. And one of the things that I had was cloth books. So I don't want, you know, we don't have to go. My story is, you know, long and winding. So
yeah,
I go into all of it, but I made cloth books for a very long time. So like on Etsy, I would say it was like 10 years of making cloth books. So they were, illustrated with raw edge applique. So sort of quilt adjacent, you know?
Yeah,
they were,
absolutely. But during that, quilt adjacent and art objects.
Art objects.
In my opinion. Also,
100%.
Right?
100%. But I find myself kind of like looking down on them at this point, partly because it was such a commodification of my work in a way that's fine, but it was like, I was making it for other people and I wasn't really able to make the choices I wanted to make. And I was charging far too little for them because people wouldn't pay. Like truly I would spend 40 hours on these and charge like $200. It was like, it's so.
But you also weren't in your head, you weren't considering yourself an artist yet, you know? So like, I understand the perspective of looking back and looking down on it, but you're looking back after you've made this decision and identity choice to say, I am 40. It's time for me to be an artist now, you know, like you start, you know, you kind of opened with that moment and like, you're saying this was before that moment. So I don't know. Yeah. I relate to that, but also, yeah, I just feel like it was like your artist self, like emerging, you know, during that time.
I do think, I think during that time, I am grateful for it because I really developed over the like hundreds of books I made a real sense of like color. My own personal of like understanding color in a way I've never studied color theory.
Which is mind blowing because that is like the number one thing that I think most people think of when they look at your work is like, holy cow, this woman knows color. You know,
well, you know, a lifetime of working with it, I think, you know, I mean, who were the first people who like developed color theory, like, they didn't have color theory. So it's, you know, so I just, you know, I made cloth books for a long time. And when my youngest was entering school full time, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I need to make this sustain my business sustainable, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I just need to keep doing cloth books, but I need to make a better living at it. I can't be like killing myself for $200 a week, you know? Mm-hmm. So I signed up for an artist entrepreneur class at my local art center in 2016, I think, 2017. And it was then that it was the first time I had really been around, like been a part of a cohort of artists. Mm-hmm. And everyone else there were artists. They were like, mm-hmm. yeah, figure out how to sell my art. And I was too, but I didn't know it.
You
know?
Yeah.
And they all kind of were like, hey, you're an artist. Like, and at that point I sort of abandoned the business. I was like, well, I mean, it's all a business, but
right.
I abandoned the items I was making and thought I want to make what I want to make. I want to explore what would I do if, you know, nobody was telling me, oh, I want this book that to be like pink and orange and you know, whatever. Right. And yeah. And at that point I just really dove in with the help of like my local community of artists. Yeah. And yeah.
Okay. I just want to go back for a moment because something in your story resonates so much with me. And then we can move on, but I had that same, we'll have to talk later about this, but I had that same trajectory of like the moment where, or, you know, this initial phase in my career where I stopped working for institutions and started working for myself. And that led me to, you know, kind of this idea of really wanting our whole lifestyle as a family, we had one kid at the time, to be value led, right? Like to kind of live this life of simplicity and like back to kind of basics, like you described. And your picture of that was rural Vermont. And mine was when we moved to Tennessee and we were like, we're going to be homesteaders and we're going to live this quiet country life because those are the things we value. And then I lived there for 6 years and I was like, I need more. I need diversity. I need community. Yeah. I need people. And so it just like very interesting to me that, you know, we both kind of had this moment of thinking that like what we wanted was one way. And then you like live that lifestyle and you're like, okay, actually I can be this type of person who lives in this way and also is engaged with like an urban environment. And that was like really key for me to understand that. And that's why we moved to Fort Wayne, because exactly all the reasons you listed, we wanted to have neighbors and we wanted to, you know, so anyway, I just find that really interesting. And I think not like assigning those lifestyles with like a certain value, just speaking about my own and your own like experience. But I just find that there's a lot of artists who kind of go in and out of that like trajectory also because, you know, it relates so much to their career. Like, how do you connect with people and share your work? But yet, how do you find like solitude and affordable places to like, and I think like small cities, like where you and I are like where it's at because it's still like affordable, but you can have like community, you can have diversity, you can have. So I just have to give a shout out to the mid-sized or small US cities, you know? All of that said, I really appreciate this moment again where you described, you know, you were making these books and you were learning about like you were developing a skill set for like how to make art, how to think about color, how to work with your hands, you know, all of these things. But then you joined this artist entrepreneurship program. And I just really like that you kind of immediately, I mean, you were already doing it because you were selling like at, you know, markets and stuff, but you also, I don't know, like your impulse at that moment wasn't, I need to go get an MFA if I want to be a capital A artist. It was, if I'm going to be an artist, I need to figure out how to legitimately, tangibly make this work in my life, right? Like, I just really appreciate that because I think there's so many people who, again, because of, you know, those unspoken rules that we feel like we all need the education or we need the title or we need something, like, and the business comes after that, you know, but you were like, no, I'm a real person living in a real economy with people I'm responsible for. Like, how can I exist as an artist and how can I connect with people and how can I get training? And I really like that part of your story. And so I'm curious, like, how from that moment you moved towards the kind of art that you're making now and, you know, how that like translated into what you actually make and maybe some of those evolutions in your business, like your art business and your art practice over the last like 10 years. Cause really we're talking about more like, you know, 8 or 10 years of you calling yourself an artist and really starting to like start an art business.
Yeah, that's right. It's interesting that you say, that you point out that I didn't immediately jump to, I need to go back to school. Like I need to get an MFA because it didn't even cross my mind. I mean, like education, I'm like an alternative education gal. My kids went to like preschool. Like we just, you know, but it has come into my mind lately. I was like, I should try to get an MFA. I don't even have a BA. So I was like, I'm not going to do that. But like, could I do this? And I did some research on it and realized it's technically possible to do that. But I was like, what am I talking about? I'm not doing it.
Right.
So there was a moment, but yeah, like the trajectory, it's interesting because, at this point, my husband was still, his entire life has been a carpenter, a self-employed carpenter. So he supported us, you know, we've never been well off, but it's, we don't want to live to work. We want to, you know, only work enough so we can live really.
Right.
So that's what we've always kind of worked for ourselves. And, so he continued to work, as a carpenter and sort of supported me through this period of time where I was really not making a lot of money. I supported the family, you know, and allowed me to do this. And so like the initial step was like, okay, I'm not going to make cloth books anymore. I'm done with like childish things. Right. Like I was just like, my kids are getting older. I'm sort of like out of that phase. I don't identify with that anymore. So I did shift. I did continue to do markets, but I shifted to quilts, to functional quilts, which, I mean, you've done some patchwork, some quilting. Mm-hmm. You understand how much time that takes, how much labor goes into that. And honestly, how little the world values a functional quilt is super sad. So, but I did sell some, you know, usually it was like baby crib lap size quilts because that was like all you could, you know, sell for any reasonable amount of money. Even that was not enough. But, and at a certain point, like I realized, oh, if this is an art object, which it's the same thing, just leave on it and you put it on the wall, you can charge, you know, 3-4 times as much more. So I was continuing to make functional objects and I truly like embraced the functionality. I didn't want to lose that functionality because I wanted to assert like, no, you should actually, yes, you should pay, you know, $500 for this small wall piece, but you should also pay $2,000 for that crib quilt or whatever.
Yes.
You know? So I get that that's not in everyone's means though. So it's like this slippery slope that I deal with daily in my brain, you know, about equitable access, but we can talk about that in a little.
Yes.
So like, I just kind of, and then, so I was making quilts. I also shifted to making like rope vessels, rope bowls, like sewn things, which were fun. I really had a lot of fun sort of sculpting with the sewing machine and rope. I'm sure you've seen these.
Were you exhibiting the work? Like, where were
No. Okay. So I was, I should say, I was starting to submit some like wall quilts to local small exhibits, and a couple of them were getting in, but I wasn't really going too hard on that. And then I was actually started applying to a couple residencies. I got one in the Catskills, this really small one, which was so lovely. And it was so I was just kind of like building momentum. It sort of dipping my feet, trying to like get comfortable with this idea that, oh, yeah, actually I'm an artist. I can do the artist things, like a residency. Like I'm all about residencies now. But at the time I felt like so like, oh, I don't know if I should, because you have to do a statement and you have to, you know. But that was something I worked on in the entrepreneur class, is like the statement and the bio, all of that like was part of that. So I know at a certain point I was like selling work, and I don't, it's a little blurry, you know. At this time I also have a teenager and a preteen and a toddler, so I was also like
Well, I
all
scrolled
over the
back
place.
on your Instagram and it looks like when you were doing the larger quilts and the rope
Yeah, rope pull.
vessels, you
Yeah,
were
whatever.
selling a lot at markets at that time too.
Yes.
So you kind of dipped back into markets, but then at the same time you're like figuring out how to make a living and like what works to sell and how that all works, like the economy piece, but then you're also like, what does it mean to be an artist? Like, what kind of things do artists do? Where do they show their work? What, like, they go to residencies, they do these things. So there's like a lot kind of going on
Yeah.
in, you know, like I feel like you were branching out in a lot of different ways and maybe like trying a lot of things on for size.
Yes.
And maybe to transition us to like now, you know, what is your art career now? What are like what do you kind of spend your time doing? What are your goals? And also I can't believe we're like 45 minutes into this already and
Are
I'm
we
like,
really? Oh my
well, I was just gonna say, I haven't even asked you what your work looks like, which is one of the main questions I start with. Like I have people describe their work, but like give us kind of bird's eye view, Victoria 2024.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's a lot of like administration. I mean, you know how I go. Like it's like application slash rejection season right now. Yeah, so I am really, I'm not really, I kind of wrapped up a larger body of work last year. I feel like I'm still sort of dabbling in it, but I'm kind of over it. I'm kind of like ready for the next thing, but I haven't figured that out yet. So, but I do have this pay what you can project that I do, this weekly project that is truly in a wonderful way taken over my my art practice. And it's, you know, I consider these works, so these are 8-inch stretched patchwork works. And I offer 5 of them weekly on Instagram on Saturdays for whatever price folks can want to pay for them, can pay for them.
Yes, I have one. Yay.
Kaylin has one, honored. And so these are, you know, I am committed and I have not missed a single week. And I think I'm on week 113. So it's over 2 years of doing
Amazing.
it. So that's a lot of pieces. And I don't always have a stockpile of them. So there are weeks where I'm like, oh, crap, it's Friday. I have to make 5 pieces and I'll just whip them out. And sometimes I'll have a stockpile.
That's
So,
like over
yeah.
600 pieces.
Oh, I've.
I had to do the math. I was like 130 weeks times 5 is
Okay,
650.
that doesn't include the bonus offers I do for my membership every week or every
Oh my
month.
gosh.
Include the live pay what you can exhibits I've done. Yeah, it's well over 1,000 at this point,
What?
which is amazing. So
Yes.
I don't know how long. I mean, I'm still in it and I'm still committed, but I don't know how much longer I can keep this up because it is a lot, and it is kind of taking over my practice, not only in just the making of the work, but the thinking about the work and thinking about the presentation and the way that I'm getting the work out into the world. But truly, like,
and like what you're known for as an artist, you know, it's kind of this like signature. Yeah. Oh, Victoria has this amazing project, and like that's great, but also,
yeah,
you know, is that what you want to do for the rest of your career?
It's, you know, I call these textile sketches, and they truly are experiments. I don't plan them out. I do them in the moment. I use scraps. It's all secondhand materials. So it's play, it's experimentation. Mm-hmm. It is work. It is finished work, but it's mm-hmm. not my thought out, you know, work. And I haven't really had time to mm-hmm. do a lot of that lately. So that, I really rely on residencies to find that sort of dedicated time, to really explore new ideas. And I have so many new ideas bubbling up. So I'm like, ooh, I'm kind of itching mm-hmm. for that. I did at the end of last year, I made a large scale soft sculpture piece mm-hmm. for my local, which you mentioned in my bio, for my local library. And that was a totally new thing for me. And I have so many ideas, and I'm working on a piece right now. I'm sure this will come out after the fact, but for Painting at Night, to submit to Painting at Night. So that's a whole new thing I'm really excited about. Awesome. It's just hard to find the time because, yes, I'm teaching, I'm doing like online workshops, I'm doing some speaking. I have an artist talk next week. I'm diversifying income is super mm-hmm. important for, because one thing I didn't really mention in my trajectory of like my family and our economy is that my partner, I would say 2 years ago, I think it was 2 years ago, I made more money than he did in that year. And I said, okay, here, this is it. This is the sign. You need to stop working. Cause he was miserable. He's approaching 50. He's like, okay, can't do this hard physical labor forever. And I no longer like it.
Right.
So I was like, we are not about, you know, wasting our lives doing things we don't, that make us miserable, you know? Yes. So, I was like, during the pandemic, he got really into plants.
Okay.
I was like, okay, I'm going to sign you up for this horticulture course. So he took this year-long horticulture course, and it changed his life. He is now Mr. Botany. He knows like every plant. He's finding like rare plants all over the place. He's friends with all the like state botanists. It's adorable, and I love it. And I see myself when I got excited about art.
Yeah.
I was like, I want to support you. So he's not working right now. I mean, he takes on like small jobs occasionally mm-hmm. when we're like, oh, I don't know how we're going to pay the mortgage this month. And, mm-hmm. you know, but for the most part, I do not want him working at that because I have been able to support, which is insane to say, support our family of five, which we live a very simple life. We do not travel. We do not like, there's a lot of things we don't do, mm-hmm. but we're happy. We own a home, which is a miracle. You know, we are safe and healthy and relatively happy doing mm-hmm. what we're doing. So I kind of lost the thread there, but just wanted to see that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, how old are your kids now?
Okay. So my oldest is 20. My middle child is 17 and my youngest is 10.
Okay. So, I think you're doing a lot, right? As an artist who is supporting your family, you are creating like this system where your husband can experience some freedom from kind of the, you know, the weight of bringing in monetary contributions to the family, which also becomes a mantle that you then are carrying as an artist, right? You have three kids. I wanted to like touch on the idea of, you know, the term that's like coming to mind is like cobbling, like kind of how we as artists, particularly artists who have, you know, who need to or desire to produce income from our work, like how we kind of cobble all of this together and diversify our income. And I don't want to so much talk about like the ways in which you're doing that, because we've already talked about like some of the ways, but like just the like emotional labor of that. like not knowing when the next paycheck is coming, always kind of feeling like you're on the hunt for like opportunities. Like, I just want to, I don't know, it feels like a moment to just acknowledge that, like, that's a lot to carry just emotionally. Even if you had a partner, like I have a partner who contributes financially to our income, but I feel the weight of like how I'm spending my time and like what value I'm bringing, and if I'm making something stressful for my family so that I can do something art related, like what is that kind of generating in terms of what it's giving back to either me or my family? And I hate like making it all about money, because that it doesn't, like putting effort into something because you care about it, you know, the result shouldn't be money, right? But also the reality is that we live in a capitalist system. We need money to live. Like, healthcare isn't free here. You know, there's all of these things. I don't know. I just, it's a lot. Like, it's a lot, like, in the brain.
Yeah.
At once.
You're going to make me cry, Kaylin. No, well, yeah, it's a lot. I will say, like, it is such a strange place to be in, to be someone who, you know, I don't believe in capital. I don't believe in money, but I have to believe in money. Like, I have to, you know, I'm an anti-capitalist. I really strongly believe that, like, we should be taking care of each other. Like, it's just not the reality of what it is, but we can make this reality in our own lives. It's just, it can be a real struggle. Like, it is not for the faint of heart. It is not for, you know, there are times, like right now I'm kind of working a ton. And it sort of feels, it's like, but I'm not making, where's the work, you know, or where's the, like, I don't know. It's interesting how that works. Like, as people who make art, who make a thing, to be working so hard, you know, it truly is a business. If you want to make a living at it, you need to consider all of the facets, and you need to diversify, unless, you know, only a very small percentage of us are ever going to make a living from just selling our work. And that's okay. You know, I will say the Pay What You Can project, like, it is, even though it's an uncertain amount every week, I do, you know, I choose randomly. I'm not choosing the highest bidder or whatever. So it could be, you know, $100 or it could be $700. Like, it just, you never know. But it is something that is coming in every week. So that's a little bit of a, I don't know, just psychologically, it's like, okay, at least there's something coming.
Right.
Because there are times when you're like, I think in the past, I've been very lucky in my career to be sell work quite a bit. Yeah. My work sells. Lately, it has not sold anywhere near as well as it has in the past. And, you know, I don't take that personally. It's just kind of the way it is. And you can't rely on it. So
that's
so
kind of what I hear across the board. Like, just most artists, once those, like, you know, pandemic checks stopped rolling out, and people were, you know, like the last 2 years, it was like 4 years ago, things looked really good for artists. And then like 2 years ago, it's like, it's just kind of started to peter out again. And there's just not like an economy. I don't know. There's not a lot of like extra cash floating around that people are willing to put into supporting artists and buying art, which sucks.
It does. It's still out there. I feel like I've built up somewhat through the Pay What You Can project of just the amount of exposure that I've gotten from that.
Yes.
Not that exposure to me is kind of a dirty word, because it's like, that can't pay my mortgage. Yes, exactly. You know, it's brought about other things, other opportunities, you know, and that's not why I do it. You know, the why of it all is truly about like getting my work out there and, you know, potentially making a little bit of money, but it's not really about the money. It's more about the receiver being able to have art.
I think too, the accountability of just having to make work every week, because you've set up this system where you have to get in the studio, like if you want to kind of stay accountable to this project that you have built for yourself. Like I think of it like a 100-day project, you know, where it's like you kind of put this structure in place to help you meet your goals, and you're showing up to that structure every week, you know.
It's good to remember that at times, because there are times when I feel like, oh, I'm completely failing. You know, I mean, it's a lot of that. It's a lot of like, what am I doing? Why am I making it so hard for myself? It's not an easy life to try to also not only live as an artist, you know, support yourself fully as an artist, but also in a way that's equitable and value-led, like you said. Like, it's really important to me that I'm not gouging anyone. I want to be generous. I want to share what I can. And living in sort of this like abundance mindset as opposed to a scarcity mindset, which is really hard, you know? It's hard to maintain that when you're like, I don't know how I'm gonna pay the bills next month, but we'll figure it out. The other thing is like we're creative people. We figure it out. Like there's always something to be done.
Yeah, I think also like we are in a capitalist system that makes us feel as if we're going to live by our values and not and be generous to others, we're going to suffer at the cost of it. And so I think that's also really hard, is like finding boundaries around like what is sustainable for you versus what is a way in which you can show up to the world without just like depleting yourself, you know? Like that balance of like what am I worth? But also, what am I worth? Like on the other side, you know, it's just like a hard, and we're not like we haven't like grown up in a culture that creates sustainable visions of that. Like, and I think that you are somebody who is trying to do that, but you also are living within, you know, a place that doesn't support that lifestyle, right? It's so hard.
I do think there's a growing movement toward a sort of shared abundance idea and like mutual aid. A lot of things I think honestly sparked by the pandemic of like, actually we need to take care of it. It is not maybe not the culture at large, but like there are subcultures that can be growing and can set an example. So that's kind of what I'm hoping to do more than anything else, to like get people thinking about it. Like, oh, yeah, what is the value of that? Like, how can I? Oh, maybe I can afford to give a little bit more to su help support this artist that I really love. Like, you know, so
Well, I think a good transition for that is I would love for you to describe your equity pricing model, because I think this is something that I am so inspired by that I think a lot of artists love the idea of it, but again, it becomes this sort of like admin nightmare where it's like, how do I figure this out? So, if you could just kind of explain your model, like I think we've established why something like equity pricing is valuable to you, but maybe you could talk about how you've really implemented that into your practice and your art business.
So, you know, I started the Pay What You Can project as a way of like allowing people to own my work, who like I couldn't afford my own work. So I was, I need to charge a lot, but also I want people like me to be able to have it. But then, you know, as it went along, I was like, yeah, but I still want people to be able to buy the larger work if they really want it. So I have always been, and I think a lot of artists do already do this sort of equity pricing, just not calling it that. So like maybe you're having a studio sale and somebody comes to your studio and they're like, oh, I really love that, but I can only do this much, or I could do a payment plan. Like artists are already creatively selling their work, I think. So this is just maybe making a more sort of concerted effort to organize it a little bit. So just recently I instituted, I just, you know, the other thing is I think we all know that pricing art is pretty arbitrary. Like we all kind of do it. There's no like, so truly it's like, you know, what are we doing? So I actually, for my pricing model, I use like a general per square inch, and then I factor in like, oh, this is a really complicated design. I might add a little, I might, you know, decrease a little and like it might shift. I just have kind of this rough idea of how to right. price. And then I think about it a little bit and I come up with this price. And then I take for the equity pricing, I'll take 20% off for the equity price. The standard price is that initial price. And then I'll do like a supporter price, which is 20% more.
So up to 40% off your kind of standard price.
It would be like 20% off for the equity price, 20% more for the supporter price.
Right.
So it's like, and the other thing is like, I always will take payment plans. I'll always, I often do trades with other artists. Mm-hmm. I can't always do that, but like, mm-hmm. if I want to, if I can, or do, you know, creative, I call it creative reciprocity. So like, mm-hmm. how can we make it work for both of us? And I will work with people on that. So, and I'm pleased to say that, like, I feel like my work is getting into hands of people who never would have thought they could buy $1,000 art or whatever, you know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. and I also feel like, I mean, I have gallerists and people telling me I charge too little for my work, which, what does that mean?
Right.
I'm just like, I'm happy with it. I don't want to be gouging people. I'm not right. into getting tons of money. That's not what I'm about. So mm-hmm. I just want to support my family. So
yeah. You want it to be sustainable for you and for your collectors.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about material and kind of studio stuff. So I love your studio. I am so envious of your amazing organization because I think the hardest thing about being a textile artist is the piles of crap that just like, you know, because it's not like paint where it's contained, right? It's like in a vessel, like, right? It's you pull something because you're like, I think I want more of that color. And like this big piece of fabric comes out and you're like, no, not that color. And you push it aside. And like, that is what I'm doing all day in my studio. And therefore there are just piles of stuff everywhere until I eventually spend like 3 days cleaning it up. And then I start the process all over again. So I guess I didn't mean to ask you about organization, but like any tips for like keeping your studio tidy or organized, or like what are like maybe some systems or routines that you do just to keep your studio feeling good to you? You know, of course it feels good to have an organized studio, and I know that's part of probably your inspiration for keeping it the way it seems like you keep it.
Yeah, I do. I am extremely tidy. So yeah. I know a lot of artists, there's the, you know, the trope of like the messy artist, whatever, and that's not me. However, there are moments, like right now, I would say my studio is pretty messy because I've been busy. Like I was recording like content. So I have this like set up and like all of this, you know, my sewing machine is in a weird place. Like I just, you know, but the fabrics, and I also get into this routine of like pulling the fabrics and then having this like weird stack of, and maybe I didn't fold it again. And then it becomes, you know. But I do try to have, like, you've probably seen, like, the wall of fabrics that I have, like, color wall of fabric. But I'll have, like, a bin where I will try to fold and put, like, as I'm working, if I'm done with something, I'll put it in that transitional bin. You know, and then, like, I can take a moment in an evening or, like, whatever to put those things back where they actually go. Okay. Instead of taking the time, your precious, you know, studio time, your kids are at school or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, to do that. I try not to do that. And then periodically I'll do a big sweep of my, like I just gave away all of my prints. I think I gave them. Cause I was like, I don't need these anymore. Like these need to go.
Yeah.
Gave them all away. And so I think not being precious, not holding on to things that you know you're not going to use, like getting the clutter out.
I need to do that. I definitely need to do that. Yeah. As an artist, I'm like, but maybe.
But you might someday.
But it's like, no, you can, if you need that thing, like it'll come back around, you know? Yeah. If you have not used matte medium in 10 years and the jar is like half crusted.
It doesn't last forever.
If you decide you'll use it later, like go get a jar of matte medium. Like I'm just like, free yourself of the clutter, Caitlin.
Yeah, it's like how scarcity mindset finds its way in all aspects. It's like, for me, the prints were like, I know I'm not going to ever use these print print fabrics.
Yeah.
Or maybe I will someday, but I don't need,
but
I
can get back around.
Yeah. So yeah, it was just like, this is not serving me. It's in my way. It's confusing me and distracting me from what I'm actually trying to do. So, yeah, I think minimal. And it's funny that you say that, because this studio is in my home, which is wonderful that I have the space, but it is truly open to the rest of the house, which it's like the bane. I just desperately want a studio outside of my house. It's not in the cards financially right now, maybe soon, hopefully. But yeah.
So what kind of room is it in within your house? It's not like a bedroom where you can close the door.
No, there's no door. So we have like an urban, like a row house kind of thing, like 3-story house. And the top 2 stories were converted into a single family. So we have the stairwell comes. This is basically the 3rd floor living room space.
Oh,
so it's open to the stairwell. And then the bedrooms are off the hallway. Like there's no door.
But you have an additional living room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's a common area, but it's not an area that your family has to use.
No,
for living.
It's a pass through.
Okay,
it's a pass through.
But still, I can see how visually you would want the tidiness. Yeah. Like the way that I do that is I have a garage and that's my studio.
Yes.
I can, and it's funny because my home is very tidy and like a lot of the principles that you talked about, like. I have a transition basket for clothes that are kind of in use, but kind of not. And it's like, I haven't taken any of those principles into the studio, you know, like I don't know. I think it is like a scarcity mindset thing, just feeling like, and also just, it's not like every time you do something in your house, you're tearing it apart, which is kind of what you're doing in the studio. You pull all your materials out, like, or, you know, a majority of them. I guess it's like cooking a little bit, you know, you make a mess of the kitchen and then you got to put everything back.
Right? I'm also a very tidy cook though. So I like, I take things as I go, but
I'm not, but that's because one of my husband's card is kitchen cleanup. So
nice.
I kind of have like, I start that process, I get us all fed and then he has to come in and like, by that time I'm like, I got to get out of here.
I will say, just a caveat, my husband does almost all of the cooking, so I shouldn't even like mention cooking.
So we're like opposite in that. That's awesome. So another question I had related to studio, I got us a little sidetracked with organization just because I wanted to know for me, but you know, you mentioned that you've done the Pay What You Can project and it kind of started as like a commitment to studio sketches, right? Learning about composition, about color. You created, you know, this structure within which you could really learn, like hone some skills and like experiment and play.
Yep.
So what in this moment, right? Because there's hopefully as an artist, we're always evolving. Like what are some things that you're really wanting to do like materially, conceptually with your work? Not so much the Pay What You Can project, but I'm thinking like the bigger work, like what are, you know, you mentioned you have like all these ideas kind of like under the surface, like let's talk about them. What are some of those ideas?
So most of it revolves around sort of soft sculpture because I did this large scale thing, which really was a sort of a combination of a bunch of smaller, bits. Like I made these stuffed, you know, like chains and nets and all kinds of different stuff. It was a weaving, you know, with some stuffed tubes and just different things like that, that I really want to explore further. I am slowly doing that, but it's a totally new thing for me. So it's almost like I need that shift of mindset out of like my day-to-day studio, which is why I would love to have a residency to really delve into it.
Mm-hmm.
New ideas. There's something about a new space, a different space for me that really, I can do it within my studio, but it just, I get hung up, you know, the dryer dings and I'm like, oh, I gotta go get, you know, we talk about it a lot of time on your podcast, but so there's that. There's also, I would love to do more public art. So I actually really would love to do a mural. Never paint, but like I feel like my work would translate really well.
Oh my god, your work is
right?
That'd be so good.
Yeah. So I have these ideas. It's interesting though. I do not sketch. Like I don't draw sketch really.
I don't really either.
So I sketch by making the work. So, so it's like carving out that time to experiment with materials, has been tricky, but there's still, it's like brewing in my head. I worry a little that it's going to go away if I don't find the time. So I'm trying to figure out how to find that time to really dive in soon, like in the next month, you know.
Well, and you mentioned branching out from textile. Do you think paint is what you're interested in branching into? Or are you thinking like mixed media work or not sure yet?
I don't know. I know so little. My daughter happens to be a painter, so I'm like, she can help me. But she's like an oil painter, so I'm like, I don't think I want to do that. I don't know. That seems hard. I don't. But I think paint, I don't know. I think there's something about, you know, I've started dabbling with calling my work paintings, like stretch paintings, but I feel so self-conscious about that. And I've talked with Barbara Campbell Thomas, actually. I'm like, okay, so you call your works paint. Do they have paint? She's like, yeah, they do have like some spray paint and stuff. But it's like, call it a painting. And I just, that to me is like, so, scary for some reason. I'm just like, somebody's gonna call me out on that, but at the same time I'm like, but people see it often on Instagram or, you know, even in person, and think that's a painting, the stretched work. So I'm like,
Barbara and I have had this conversation several times, but I was actually thinking about that earlier because I wanted to say something to you about your work being like a painting, or being a painting, or your paintings, or like I caught myself, and then I was like, what does that even mean? Like in, you know, in my head, like I've had this conversation several times. And I was thinking like the word, like to me, it's like composition. Are you a composer? You know, if you're a painter, you're somebody who is creating compositions, and like the material, you know, and they may end up being presented or in a square or like rectangle format, but that even doesn't make it a capital P painting, right? Look at Coulter Fussell, like a quilter, she's a painter. She's just an artist. Like we're all just artists, right? And like, who cares about the label? But I think Coulter especially is like somebody who is quote unquote making paintings with textile, right?
Yeah, I don't think I wouldn't question that for a second, but like in my own, it's sort of like the people who are painters who come to textiles, it's like, yeah, sure, they can say it's a painting, but it's like, can I paint a painting? Cause I've never painted. So, but yeah, it's an interesting, I mean, we could go on forever about just about
that.
Well,
and then also I also am like, isn't it a little more art world's countercultural to reject the term painting and say, no, these are quilts and you're gonna appreciate these just as much as you would, you know, appreciate these as if they were paintings, you know?
That has been my position, but lately, as I do really, I don't think I've quilted anything in like months. I'm doing patchwork, I'm making sewn paintings, you know? So I'm sort of coming around to the idea of like the sewn painting, but
I like that.
Yeah. I don't know.
We are defying labels here. You know, it doesn't matter, but it is fun to think about, you know, kind of the language that we use to frame our work and to associate our work in certain contexts, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay. This has been such a great conversation. I want to wrap us up with having you just touch briefly, because we didn't talk too much about being a parent, but that's okay. Like, you know, it's all there. But I'm just curious, like, what your kids think about your practice, like how, you know, you have really described a lifestyle that I hope I'm also living, in which my husband and I are both like making a living doing things that we care about and we love. You know, he is a bit more traditional in the like academic institution, like background of that. But of course, like I'm all for like alternative models of, I mean, that's like the whole platform, right? Is like, alternative models of doing things and education and, connecting as artists and all these things. But I think part of my, conviction, if you will, with that is like, I'm a parent and I want my kids to be exposed to like the things that I care deeply about. And I want our life and our careers to feel like something that we're building together as a family, not just like this closed door thing that mom or dad do and they have to run away screaming from it, like, at the end of the day, So I'm just curious a little bit about kind of, I don't know, like how your kids like see your work and how much they're involved in kind of your practice. And, I know that's changed over time. So again, you can talk more directly about like this phase of parenting that you're in.
Yeah. I would say my kids are mostly somewhat oblivious. They're not. I mean, I have two, 20-year-old and a 17-year-old, and they're both kind of like to me. They're like, yeah, cool. But then I'll see them like share on Instagram something. Yeah. And they're proud and they'll come to my openings. And my daughter, my oldest, is an artist. So she's, she gets it. Mm-hmm. And I think more than my kids themselves, but my kids' friends have said to me, who are like in art school, they're like, I'm doing this because I see, Victoria and Elisa, actually Elisa, who is on recently, they're working artists, they're able to do it. She's a friend of ours. And so just being that like role model, even for my kids' friends.
Yeah.
So amazing. But I would say my youngest is cool with it. She's also very much an artist, but she does not like me to go to residencies at all. But she's my like pandemic baby. So she was six when the pandemic happened, but we were inseparable during that time. So we're very close. We're probably the closest to my kids. But she was able to come to a residency with me, and that was adorable. Good. I would say my family is extremely supportive of the work, but you're right. Like part of why, when I think, oh, I should just get a job, I can't do this anymore. Like, it's too much. I'm like, no, I want to model for my children that you can make a, living ish. following your passion, whatever that might be, maybe it's not art, but I will say, and we've always given my kids everything they need. Mostly what they want, obviously not everything. My son goes to, my daughter, my oldest and my son go to like a private boarding school, which got full scholarship, but like still, opportunities. And so I'm like, you're not hurting, but my son is about to go to college next year and he wants to study finance.
Because, of all things.
He's an amazing photographer. I was like, oh, don't you want to go to art school? He's like, Mom, I don't want to be poor.
That's all right. He can get the pension and like help you retire,
In fact, he said, who's going to take care of you when you're old? I was like, I guess you are. That's clear. So anyway, very
That's
supportive.
Amazing.
They're awesome.
Oh, I'm so glad that you're creating that culture at home, but also that, your kids are responsive to your practice and your kids' friends. That's really cool.
Oh yeah. That's the best part. You're like, that's when you know you're doing it right.
All right, Victoria, we unfortunately have to bring this conversation to a close. I don't want to, but it's been amazing to chat with you. Five final questions just to wrap up the interview. Number one, who is your biggest art crush?
This one was hard. I'm going to say Carmen Herrera. Just because I just most identify with her work and her whole thing. I love her.
Love her so much. Okay. Number two, favorite place to travel or dream trip that you want to go on?
So I've mentioned that, travel isn't really in the financial cards for us, but we do prioritize a week on the coast of Maine every year. So we've been going to the same place for 14 years now, and it's just a dream. It needs
That's
to
awesome.
Be more. Yeah.
Okay, a book or a film that has been a big inspiration to you?
This one was also hard. I was like, oh my God, I've read so many books, so many movies. But the one thing that just kept coming up kind of goofy, but Harold and Maude was a
Oh.
movie that I saw, first time when I was like a real punk kid, and it was like, this is me, this is what I want. And I look back on it and I'm like, oh, I always wanted to be Maude. I was like, she's amazing, she's my role model. She was an artist.
Yes, that's so
So
cool.
yeah.
Okay, favorite meal.
I'm gonna say it's like Indian food, whatever.
Yeah, me
Indian,
too.
yummy.
I just had some great Indian in London.
Oh, I bet. Oh, yeah. It's all
Great.
about. We actually did travel to Scotland and the Netherlands for our honeymoon, and
Oh.
in Scotland, it's like you could either have Indian takeout or like fried everything.
Yes, fried carbs. Yes. Okay, and who do you want to give a shout out to or a thank you for supporting your work?
I mean, obviously my partner and my family, but I would also just say like my local art community. We're small but mighty, and Color Works, the Albany Center Gallery, Opalka Gallery, and just all of the artists that I've been able to befriend have
Yeah.
been just, they've made me the artist I am.
So good. I love that community and glad that Painting at Night is plugged in there.
1,000%. Love it.
Yes. So, all right. Well, thanks so much, Victoria. Last but not least, where can folks find you and connect with you?
My website is victoriavanderlaan.com, and I'm on Instagram at victoria_vanderlaan.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Caitlin.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.